All right. What we're going to do is go ahead and finish this review. We're just doing the review real fast. In Genesis 22, we have the sacrifice of Isaac. And we noted three passages about that. Hebrews 11, verses 17 through 19, which describes Abraham offering him. And the idea was that he accounted that God was able to raise him back from the dead, which also in a figure he did receive him. And then we also read James 2, verses 21 through 24, which talks about that Abraham's faith wrought with his works. And by faith was, or by works was faith made perfect, and so on. So I want to go on now, and in chapter 23, and again, we're not spending a lot of time. So look in chapter 23 and just note what story is told there. It's the death of Sarah, right? The death of Sarah. So Abraham had to buy a burial place. So that's what he set out to do. And, all right. I probably left it up here. So, this is Hebron, and Mamre was near Hebron. It was in the vicinity of Hebron. So, the cave of Machpelah was there at Mamre. So, he went and bought that cave from, whom did he buy that from? What nationality was he? A Hittite. He was called Ephron the Hittite, so he bought the field, and in that field, that's where he buried his dead. So he buried Sarah, and then Isaac came along, and he was buried there, and he buried Rebekah, and later on. We know that Jacob buried Leah there. She's mentioned later on. And also Jacob was buried there, okay? So there were three couples that were buried there. And that was in the cave of Machpelah. So that was the story there. The cave of Machpelah. Meanwhile, after the purchase of the cave, we come to chapter 26. Look at this now. In chapter 26, we have verses 3 and 4. Verses 3 and 4. All right. Nathan, would you like to read? Or you? All right. You're not there yet. Who's there? All right. Paul, how about reading 26? This is Genesis 26, verses 3 and 4. All right. And this one, in this passage, I really like it because read the next verse and notice why God gives the reason why he's doing this.
Because Abraham obeyed my voice, kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws.
Okay. So here is the threefold promise again. Now then, notice we'll go over to chapter 28. And by this time, we have Jacob has come along, and so on. So look in Genesis 28, verses 13 and 14. Verses 13 and 14. Scott, can you do that? Genesis 28, verses 13 and 14. So you see, in these passages that we've noted, the threefold promise is made. It's made to Abraham, then it's made to Isaac, and then it's made to Jacob. So I think it's very interesting that this threefold promise, throughout the Bible, we'll keep that promise before us. But it was made to these three patriarchs in order. As one succeeded the other, that's what God did. He made that promise. So, all right, now the other passage, we're almost through with this review. Look over in Genesis 49 now. And as you turn over to Genesis 49, kind of look and remind yourselves of what has been going on as we have processed this review. As we've gone on, what has happened? What did Jacob do? What did Joseph do? And so on. Tell me a little bit about that. Yeah. And they moved down into Egypt and so on. They sold Joseph and all that. So you see, all that is going on. And so in 49, that's where I'm drawing attention to. Genesis 49. Genesis 49 and verse 10. All right? Jeff, how about reading that? 49:10. Okay, so this Shiloh is the name of a city, but it's not the name of a city here. What is it here? Do you remember what the word Shiloh means? Peace. That's right, peace. So somebody whose name means peace is going to come. And what does it go on and say about him? To him shall be the obedience of the peoples. Some of the people. No, it says the people. So it doesn't specify which people, but I believe that it includes many more people than we might normally think. Genesis 49:10. What is the scepter? I think we mentioned that before in our review. What is the scepter? That's right. That's exactly right. So this is a really important passage. So in our review, we have called attention to all these passages, so many of them, like Genesis 15:6 Genesis 49:10 and many other passages, and that's what we've tried to do. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Shiloh is Jesus. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Shiloh is Jesus because peace and his name in the Bible many times he is called peace. And so anyway, I'd like to hear the context of that reading. Until tribute comes. I've never read anything about that. And a reason why that would be the case. I really don't know. Shiloh. So I really don't know. But the word means peace. So one of the things we have to understand, see, I don't know who's behind. I think the ESV is a pretty good translation. Really do. I think it's a good one. But you don't know who's really behind it and who has strong input. I think somebody else had strong input into that. Because normally, I actually have never read that definition attached to this work. So I think it is more than likely that it's some, perhaps a Jewish influence or if it's not a Jewish influence, it's an unbelieving remark, I think. So I think that the idea is that it is peace, and I think it is a reference to Jesus. But you see, there is an effort to divert everything away from the Messiah and everything. So that's a leaven that's at work in scholarship and things like that. I was reading a book, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, and the book, Laura and Scott have that book, and so I was kind of impatient or something. I don't know if that's the word or not, but I was looking at that book, and I realized, good night, it's a Jewish publication, so guess what they do? Any opportunity they have to divert the idea of Christ, oh, well, they will do that. So, all right. Anyway, all right, so having done that, what I want to do now is go ahead and begin our study of Exodus, and we're going to give a review. Not a review, an overview. So I want you to go with me through the text here of Exodus. So now let me see, which book is that? It's the next one, right? All right, it's the next book. All right. So all I want you to do as we go through this is just notice as we look along what's being done. Now the first six chapters, that's going to have the story of Moses. The story of Moses. So look at what we have, like in chapter 1. Do you see chapter 1? Can you look at that and see in that chapter 1 you have the oppression of the Israelites? Pharaoh arises that knows not Joseph, so he begins to oppress the children of Israel. So that's what you've got there. And so in chapter 2, who comes along? All right, so Moses comes along. So in that first chapter, you've got the oppression. The Pharaoh is trying to oppress the people, and he's getting the Egyptians on his side, trying to make them do things and so on. But in chapter 2, we have the birth of Moses. And so there's a little background about Moses' parents and so on. And we're not taking a lot of time. But look at verse 1. All right, let's see. Jim, how about reading verse 1, chapter 2 and verse 1? All right, now what's interesting here is both this, the husband and the wife were of Levi. So I think that's a very interesting thing. So she has the baby and so on. And she hides the baby and so on. So in chapter, all right, this is chapter 2. How quick is the story of the early story of Moses dealt with here? Long biography here in chapter 2. Man. Yeah, there's not a long biography at all. So in chapter 1, in chapter 2, like in verse 11, when Moses is grown up, he goes up, went out to his brethren, looked on their burden, and he saw an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew. So he goes out there and rescues that Hebrew, but then what does he have to do? He has to flee. So he goes out. So where does he go then? To the wilderness. That's right. So in chapter 3. Now, and in fact, he does that before chapter 3. All right? So look in the last few verses of chapter 2. Why have you not called him that he may eat bread? And Moses was content to dwell with a man. And Jethro gave Moses Zipporah his daughter. and she bare a son, called his name Gershom, and so on. So as time goes along, look at what happens in verse 23. King of Egypt dies. Now, is this the first king of Egypt? Well, we met a king of Egypt as the story begins. As the story began, we met a Pharaoh that knew not Joseph. Now, in verse 23, it came to pass in the course of those many days. So we don't know if this is the same Pharaoh or not. This may be a different Pharaoh, a successor. And we're not just really dealing with that. Like we will make some points later on. But chapter 1 and 2, by this time, actually, Moses is 80 years old. All right? Isn't that fascinating? So you have these chapters. Passing of time. Passing of time. So now then, in chapter 3, he's keeping the flocks of Jethro, his father-in-law. And who is his father-in-law? The priest of Midian. And he led his flocks on back in there. And this story tells about something interesting now that happens to Moses. As he is out here, he looks around somewhere, some direction, he looks. And what does he see? A bush on fire. Now, somebody lit a match to it. No. We don't know how it got started. That's not the point. But it was burning. Now, a bush that is like a desert bush, dry and so on. You know what? A bush that gets a fire in the desert, you know what happens to it? Man, I mean, it's burned up almost immediately. But this one kept burning. So Moses was curious, and he went over and to look at this and see what was going on. So the rest of the story then is what is going on here. Who is this in the bush? That's right, God is in the bush. And so he's dealing with Moses. And so as he deals with Moses, Moses says, "Who are you? What's your name?" And he goes on and asks him other questions. And I like to say, "Who are you?" And then, "Who am I?" Who am I that I should do this? And so he has four excuses. And God takes care of all of them. All of them. So God deals with him. And again, we're not trying to study this in detail. But what does God tell him that he's going to do? "Hey, Moses, I've decided I'm going to save the people." "Oh, wow, great. And you're going to do it." "What? But I what? I'm not able." I guess all of us have our times of saying, "I'm not able." So maybe Moses had his time of saying, "I'm not able." And so God said, "Oh, yes, you are. I'll be with you," and so on. So in chapter 5, and in fact in the rest of chapter 4, God sends Aaron down to meet Moses. So he goes down there and so on. And meets him. And I like the fact in verse 27, 4:27, God or Jehovah said to Aaron, "Go to the wilderness to meet Moses." And he went and met him in the mountain of God. I like that. Mountain of God. And kissed him. And Aaron told Moses all the words of the Lord and so on. So they gathered the elders together and told them what had been done. And those elders were thrilled to death, weren't they? Yeah. Because what is God going to do? He's going to rescue us. And then some problems come. So it's just interesting. Look at the fact that they are very interested, very eager in chapter 4, the rest of it. So the Lord, they believe that the Lord had visited the children of Israel. He had seen their affliction. They bowed their heads and they worshiped. Chapter 5. What happens in chapter 5? Moses and Aaron go to Pharaoh. And what do they ask him to do? Let the people go. And Pharaoh just, I don't know exactly the best word, he just shows himself. He is so ugly. Why should I do that? Who is God? I don't know God. Do you remember, I quote Leon Malden, when he had when the idea of Pharaoh was saying, God, who is God? I don't know God. And you remember what Leon said? God signed him up for a 10-lesson course in who God is. I really like that. So I'll give that one to Leon. But I really like that. So God signed him up for a 10-lesson course. So so that's chapter 5. But are they still encouraged? Oh boy! Look at the last the last paragraph in chapter 5. Moses returned to the Lord. Lord, wherefore hast thou dealt ill with this people? Why is it that you sent for me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak your name, he's dealt ill with his people. Neither have you delivered this people at all. Now, how would you describe Moses there? Discouraged, isn't he? Absolutely. And there's so much in this story. Because do we ever have a problem with discouragement? Yes. I will be the first to say, yes, I have problems with discouragement. Well, Moses was discouraged. Well, did God say, well, since you're discouraged, Moses, it's all over for you. I'll get somebody else. No. The thing is, God is willing to work with somebody. Isn't that a wonderful thing? He's willing to work with somebody to help them grow, to let them grow. So he didn't write Moses off. And look in chapter 6. This is the end of the section that we're actually looking at here in chapter 6. And if you look at chapter 6 and see what's going on there. It's basically giving the family of Moses. You all see that? It's basically giving the family of Moses. So that those first six chapters are dealing with the story of Moses, as Moses is, first of all, the affliction of the Israelites, Moses born, and so on. Then he flees Egypt and goes into the wilderness, and so God contacts him, and so on. So here he is now. All right, so let's go to the next chapter now. All right, so as you look in chapter 7, what this is going to be, this begins the plagues. This begins the plagues. This begins the 10-lesson course. So they go to, so the Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron, your brother, shall you be your prophet. And you'll speak all that I command you, and so on. So, look in chapter 7 and verse 7. Chapter 7 and verse 7. Nathan, can you read that, please? Now, that's interesting because Moses was 80, Aaron was 83. We don't know how old Miriam was, but those were the three children. So, let's see, a little bit further. All right. So, Moses and Aaron went into Pharaoh, and did they have any signs or anything like that to give? God gave them some signs and things like that. So, now what Pharaoh did, well, I can match that. So it starts out matching them. And one of the interesting things is as you see this going along, these magicians match it until they are so afflicted with boils they can't even stand before Pharaoh. And then they get to the point, hey, Pharaoh, there's something serious going on here. We can't do this. You better listen to these men. And even the magicians are pointing that out. You better listen to these men. So, as time goes along, we have all of these plagues that arise. All right, so let's just turn some pages over. And again, I just happened to spot in chapter 9 and verse 13, the Lord said to Moses, "Rise up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and said to him, Thus saith the Lord, the God of unto him, Thus saith the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, let my people go." Over and over and over. The idea is, let my people go. So God repeats that over and over again. Let my people go. And I'm trying not to just deal with all of the plagues at this point, but the plagues are coming along. And so let's go on. I want to get to the... All right, like look in chapter 11. You see a progression here. That's what I want you to see. I want you to see a progression going along here. The demands are being made, but it's not. Pharaoh is not willing yet. He's not willing. In fact, I happen to see here in 10:28, Pharaoh said, "Get thee from me, take heed to thyself. See my face no more, for in the day you see my face, you will die." How does that work out? He doesn't die, does he? In fact, then Moses himself gets angry. And one of the fascinating things here, one of the most fascinating things about this, is to watch Moses grow. As you watch Moses grow, he starts out with being, "I don't know if we can do this." And then he begins to get irritated when Pharaoh is rejecting God. And you will find that, I like to put it like this, that first of all, Moses is way over here, and God is way over here. As time goes along, you know what happens to Moses? He moves, until he is right there with God. And he gets angry with Pharaoh when Pharaoh is seeking to thwart God. When Pharaoh denies God, then Moses gets angry at Pharaoh because he is thwarting God. He's taking the part of God. And what I like to point out is that's what we need to do. We need to identify with God. So when we hear somebody saying something, whose side do we take? That's the side we take. That's right. All right. So as you go along then, they prepare to eat the Passover and so on. So they do that. And by the time they take the Passover, this is chapter 12 and verse 29. "It came to pass at midnight that the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon," and so on. "Pharaoh rose up in the night, and he said, 'Rise up, get you forth from among my people.'" both ye and the children of Israel. And go serve the Lord as you have said. Take both your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone. Isn't that something? And be gone. Get out of here. And bless me also. I think that's good. Yes. And bless me also. So he is desperate. Take your flocks and your herds, as you said, and be gone, and bless me also. He realizes he has angered God. So look in verse 37 and see what happens there. In verse 37, this begins the flight from Egypt. So the flight from Egypt begins in 12:37. So as the flight begins, and you have some other things here, but then the people get snarled up. And this is, God knows exactly what he's doing. So the people get snarled up. Chapter 14. And as they approach the Red Sea, how are they going to get across that? I mean, how are we going to do that? And so the people, by this time, they're saying, yeah, how are we going to do that? And Moses says, stand still now, and you will see the salvation of the Lord. See, that's an example. That's an example of the growth that Moses makes. Stand still now, and you will see the salvation of the Lord. So, as God leads the people and tells them what to do, you remember? Of course you remember. What does God do with the waters? How does he do it? He causes a strong east wind to blow all night. And it separates the waters, divides the waters. A wall of water on the right, a wall of water on the left. How do the people cross over? On dry ground. So they go. Have you ever thought about how many people there were there? This is a big job. So God would have held that water back. And look at. If you just think, look at the column. Make the column wide. It would still take a long time for them to get across that body of water. But when they had done it, has Pharaoh had a change of mind? Yeah. Now then, what? I must have been crazy to let them go. I'm going to bring them back. So his armies go out. Now the Israelites have crossed over on dry ground, so what do? We're going to cross over on dry ground too. Yeah, but you're going to have to hurry. So they start over, and what does God simply do? Let the waters come back together. And so it destroys the whole Egyptian army, the entire Egyptian army. And 15:26. All right, 15:26. All right, Jeff Redmond, please read that. Wow. Do you remember he did bring a number of illnesses called plagues? And he says, I will bring none of these upon you. That is if what? If you serve the Lord. Now, they didn't serve the Lord very well. But anyway. All right. So look in verse 27. Look in verse 27. Melton?
And
So, you know what this starts now? This begins the trip to Mount Sinai. All right? They begin the trip to Mount Sinai now. And they're under the leadership of Moses. And they've had some problems. They really have had some problems, but things are going along fairly well. So, 15, that's our 16 is where the actual journey begins. And in 16, they go out and gather manna, and they didn't do it right, and left some of it when they shouldn't have left it. And that what happens to it? It spoils. That's right. All right. Then as time goes along, chapter 17, the congregation of Israel journeys from the wilderness in their journeys according to the commandment of the Lord, encamped in Rephidim, and no water. No water. What are we going to do about water? What is God going to do with us? Why has He brought us out here? You know, sounds like complaint, doesn't it? We have to be careful. Man, I'm telling you, we have to be careful. We'll be complaining before we have turned around. We have to be careful about that. So, what does God do? He has Moses to strike the rock. Brings water forth out of the rock. Time goes on. And they're drawing closer. They're drawing closer to Mount Sinai now. So in chapter 18, Jethro joins Moses. He's in the vicinity of Mount Sinai. So he comes and joins them. And that's where he made the suggestion about Moses, that he was taking too heavy a burden. He needed to spread the load a little bit to hear the people and so on. Now in chapter 19, look at where they are. They have reached Mount Sinai. So look in verse 2. When they departed from Rephidim and came to the wilderness of Sinai, they encamped in the wilderness. And so here they are at Mount Sinai. So this is a big deal. And so God speaks to them. And He talks to them. And chapter 20, what does that begin? It begins the Ten Commandments. Now I'm going to show you something else. The trip to Mount Sinai, 1527 through 1925. See, look at that, through 1925. All right. Let's just read that last verse of chapter 19. All right. Steve, will you do that? I thought it was. All right. Yeah, well, yeah, all right. You read it, all right. So Moses went down unto the people and told them. So that's not quite enough. Read verses 24 and 25. All right, now what this is, what chapter 20 and verse 1, this is, I think I could argue this is the most important section in the book of Exodus, because it is the covenant that God makes with Israel. And this covenant that God makes with Israel, we draw on this section so heavily when we observe the Lord's Supper. Are you aware of that? We draw on this section so heavily. Because when we get to Exodus 24, God makes a covenant with the people, and that's where the idea is, this is the blood of the covenant. Have you ever heard that? This is the blood of the covenant. Now that's repeated in the New Testament. This is the blood of the covenant, which the Lord is making with you. So the Lord, when he quotes the information about, I'm talking about Jesus, when he quotes the information about his dying and so on, he says, this is my blood of the new covenant. And so he uses the same wording. So I think that's very, very important, because when he uses the same wording that Moses used, what Jesus is saying is, I am making a covenant with you as Moses made with the people in the Old Testament. I am making a new covenant with you. But he uses the same, basically the same language. So I want you to be impressed with that. Okay. So as we go on, and we're not going to get quite through. So look at 21, 22, 23, we've got laws in here, commandments and so on, things like that. And look at 24. In 24, this is where the action, the real main action comes with regard to the covenant. So God calls the people, like 24, he talks to the people, instructs Moses what to do and so on. So we won't go any further, but I do want to go over this review with you, okay?